My name is Beth Milnerick Kaufman, and today's date is September 8th, 2023.
My name is Michael Kaufman, and I'm Beth Kaufman's husband, and we'll be conducting this interview of my bride. And again, it's the Friday, September 8th, 2023, 10:40 in the morning, and we're here at Michigan State University in the main library. The purpose for this interview is to document information regarding my wife's time at Michigan State University and the unique nature of her experiences here as the first female. One of two first females in the Spartan Marching Band in the fall of 1972. Beth was new on campus, as was I. I was a freshman, and she was a sophomore, and she'll describe how all of that got to be. So I'll just start right in with the first question. Beth, can you tell us about your experiences in baton twirling? I guess I failed to mention that at the beginning, that Beth was a baton twirler, and so her connection with the MSU marching band was through baton twirling. So can you tell us about your experiences in baton twirling before you came to Michigan State?
Yes, actually, it started way back when I was 7 years old, and my mother was a Grinnell majorette. Grinnell's was a music store in Detroit area, and they hired or had majorettes and parades and things like that to promote their store. And my mom taught herself to twirl, and as she got older, she began teaching twirling at like a Parks and Rec sort of thing. And my sister and I would go along and watch, and we said, you know, can we also twirl? And, of course, Mom hemmed and hawed and act like, well, I don't know, we'll give it a try sort of thing. And I know inside she was thrilled to death. So we began lessons at age 7 for me, and my sister was 8, with one of my mother's students way back in whatever time that was, 1960.
Late 50s or early
late
50s,
60s. I was, yeah.
And this is in the greater Detroit area.
Yes, yeah. This is in Detroit area. And so we started lessons, and immediately after 4 lessons, entered our first competition. So the rest of my time in twirling all through high school was going to competitions around the Midwest, and usually after you graduate from high school, and I was not in a marching band in high school because I went to an all-girl Catholic school, and they did not have a marching band. So I did not have that experience then. Usually the goal for competitive twirlers is once they've gone through high school, they kind of like to continue twirling, if possible, at the university level, and which was something that I wanted to do too. I started, though, at Western Michigan University in 1971, the fall, as a freshman. I went to Western because they had a good education program, and also they had a marching band that accepted twirlers. So I twirled my first year at Western with my sister, and had every...
Older sister, right?
Older sister. Yeah. She's 13 months older than I am. So that's how I have how my twirling career started. So I was a competition twirler all those years with no marching band experience.
And so at the end of that freshman year at Western would be the summer of 1972. And
yes.
And it was all in the news about Title IX at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you find out about the opportunities at Michigan State and the Spartan Marching Band? And
No, it was completely by accident, or maybe you'd want to say fate. I happened to see an article in the local newspaper. It might have been like the Macomb Daily or the Town Courier or some such little paper. And at the bottom of the front page, there was a little article about addressing Title IX and what that impact was going to have on women in sports and other opportunities for women that would be now opening up. And for some reason, this particular article picked out Michigan State University as an example of an organization, the marching band, that would now be open to women. And I saw that, and what had happened is I was planning on going back to Western, but not being in the marching band because Western decided to change the format of how they did marching band, so they were no longer going to use baton twirlers. And so we would be relegated to maybe a special performance every now and then with the marching band. And, you know, I was upset about that, but resigned to the fact that, okay, that's how it's going to be. So I was packed and ready to go back to Western when I saw this particular article. And it caught my eye, and I thought, well, there's no harm in calling and asking more about the possibilities with the marching band. Would, you know, twirlers even be something they'd be interested in?
And this is August of
72. Yeah. This is August of 72, and like I say, my bags were packed, ready to go back to Western. And I found the number of the MSU band department and just made a simple phone call and asked if I could come for an audition, if that was even something that they would consider. And so there we were. I auditioned, and mid-August, I guess, soon before preseason, actually. So I was came onto campus and auditioned on, which is now Adams Field, was called Landon Field at the time, and it was just me. And it was director of bands, marching band, Dave Catron, and the current featured twirler, Dan Williams. They had male twirlers at the time. And the audition took place out on Landon Field. I had no music, no costume. I just did my competition twirling routine for the two men. And from there, it was, you know, well, we'd like you to come in and meet Professor Bloomquist, who's director of bands, and talk with him. And, you know, I took that to mean, oh, I guess I'm accepted.
They're on the spot.
They're on the spot, yes.
And your sister did not choose to do this. She stayed at Western.
Right, because she was a year older. She was already going to be a junior, and so she didn't have the interest in switching. And, you know, one thing about Michigan State, too, is they obviously had an excellent education program, and that was my major. So, you know, it was a good deal all around, not only being in the marching band, but a good education department. So
they accepted you, but you were not a student at the university yet.
No, and that's what with the audition and meeting Mr. Bloomquist, one of the first things Mr. Bloomquist said to me, we walked in the office, he said, well, young lady, you're going to be famous and infamous. And I was pretty naive, very naive, actually. I had really no idea what he was talking about. Because when I read the article, it didn't faze me one way or the other that Title IX, that this was this huge, huge deal. It was, I didn't understand that or comprehend that at the time. And
you really weren't auditioning because of Title IX so much as you were auditioning because there was an opportunity.
Right, because I saw that there was an opportunity.
Right.
It had nothing to do with Title IX in my mind. It was just, oh, Michigan State's going to
have twirlers,
or they're going to have women in the band. Great, I think I'll give this a try. That was my attitude coming in. And but Mr. Bloomquist, that, you know, you talk about the what was it like when I first got there and my interview with him. And he, right away, and as Mr. Blomquist did, he was just a flurry of activity, and he got things done, and he made phone calls. And, you know, the first thing I had to do was, you need to get over to the administration building. So-and-so will be waiting for you so that you can enroll in the university. And, of course, I had no classes. I had no place to live. None of that. Plus, I was obligated to Western, so needed to rescind my enrollment at Western. So it was just so much happened so fast, so quickly, that I didn't really have time to stop and take it all in and say, what am I doing? Is this a good choice to just drop Western, you know, in this minute and start to enroll in a new university when school's starting, you know, in a few weeks, and here we are. On top of that, not knowing anything about the marching band, the history of the band, anything about its procedures, its policies, its
traditions,
absolutely nothing. And my only experience with the marching band was my 1 year at Western. So I was so, you know, lost in the headlights for the longest time. But luckily it worked itself out.
So a whirlwind start.
Absolutely, yes. And yeah, besides a new location, a new place, new friends, new curriculum, new, everything was new. Plus the whole marching band was new. There's so much to learn, and I'm this little person from Warren, Michigan, standing in the middle of all of this thinking, oh my goodness, you know, this is huge. Can I do it?
You ready for the next?
Yeah.
So you were one of two women in the that were admitted to the marching band that year.
Yes. I was the actual first one accepted, if that matters at all. But Lynn Charbonneau was a saxophonist, and she was already going to be a junior, and she was in the School of Music. So she...
Music major.
A music major, yeah. And so she had already been around the bands for her freshman and sophomore year and, you know, couldn't be in marching band. But she auditioned and was accepted as a saxophone player to be in the block of marching band. So she, of course, had a big advantage because she had been at the university. She knew most of the people there. She was actually in the School of Music, as it was called then, School of Music.
Yes.
And so...
Actually, Department of Music at the time.
At the time, it was Department. Yeah. Now it's...
It went from that to a school, to a college.
To a college. So she had that advantage. Apparently, from what I've learned since then, there were maybe four or five other women who auditioned, I think mostly as musicians, and they did not make the cut. So, which told me that even though Michigan State needed to open up opportunities for women, that didn't mean anyone was going to be accepted. You still had to qualify as any other marching band member would qualify through an audition to be accepted.
Yeah, and as I know, Lynn was a very talented saxophonist. She was in the top band and concert band, and ultimately yes. became saxophone section leader in the marching band.
I think this her senior year, the very next year, she was section leader.
Yeah. And became a band director in Texas after graduation.
And unfortunately, Lynn passed away, I don't know how many years ago, several years ago in Texas, in a tragic accident on her way to her teaching job. So when we've had reunions in the past for 10 years, 20, 30, Lynn was not there. But on the 40th anniversary of Title IX, her daughter and husband were able to come back to Michigan State and, you know, take part in the festivities for the 40th anniversary of Title IX.
They were honored at halftime, I think.
Honored at halftime, which was really nice. And her daughter wore her band jacket, and it was very touching. So Lynn was a good friend. I mean, it was the two of us. And even though I'm not a music major, you know, we clung to each other initially with figuring all this out and, you know, what do we do? What do we say? What do we not do? What do we not say? And, of course, if we took band trips, it was great because Lynn and I were the only two females, so we never had any problems with bathrooms or, you know, places to change or anything like that because no lines. Two women, that was it. So that was a good thing.
Back to the start of all of this, the fall of 1972, the male members, I mean, I was a freshman, and I was just trying to fit in, and I didn't really pay attention or know much. But the older male members, what was the reception like?
I think the older male members, probably juniors and seniors mostly, were not pleased that Lynn and I were going to now be a part of their ranks. And it goes back to the ROTC tradition, and that was what the band was forever. And they didn't want any girls invading their little, you know.
Fraternity,
exactly. That's exactly what it was. And Ken Bloomquist, I think, did an excellent job of meeting with the guys.
Leadership.
The leadership in the band and explaining this is what's going to happen. And, you know, like it or not, it has to happen. And this is the way it's going to be. And I understand that there was, you know, protest and, oh, they were going to quit and all this kind of stuff. But when Lynn and I showed up at preseason, those members who didn't want us there were probably the ones that pretty much just ignored us or were indifferent, did not seek out to say hello to us or, you know, they just sort of stayed in the background for a while. But what was interesting is that as time went on shortly, they changed. They changed their tune. I had to go into the pit at the time to get classes. And I had no idea what I was going to do. And it was veteran members of the marching band that took me over to the pit when it's our time to pick out our classes.
Which at the time was Women's IM.
Yeah, it was over at the Women's IM, and it was this big jungle, you know, maze that you went through to pick out classes and pay your fees and all this and that. And they kind of plopped me in the middle of the big room, and I just stood there, and somebody had helped me come up with a class schedule, and then they just went running off in different directions grabbing cards, because at that time you got these old computer cards for your classes. And I just stood there at clueless, and they went and grabbed all my cards and ushered me through the whole registration process, and it was like taken care of. And these were some of the ones who probably didn't want me there, but, you know, ended up being the most helpful.
Yeah. Speaking of quitting, I think we missed something back the initial meet with Ken Bloomquist when he shook his finger at you.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things that he told me, you know, that some of the members were fighting against this happening and they weren't going to be too happy about it. And he said, you'll probably face some adversity and this, that, and the other thing. And I'm sort of just shaking my head, okay. And then he shook his finger at me, which he was, you know, did to a lot of people. And he said, and you must never quit. And his message to me was, okay, we're taking you on. We're trusting in you to be a good first member, good representative of women joining the band. And so you better stick it out. So it was like, yes, sir, I will not quit.
From my perspective, I was just a freshman and trying not to be noticed. I think one of the best best ways that you navigated all this was the fact that you didn't have an antagonistic approach towards your membership in the band. You were positive, and you'd smile, and it was hard not to like you, and you were good, and therefore it was easy to welcome you as a member. So,
well, I think I knew right from the get-go that although I was naive, I also realized that, okay, this is something new for Michigan State marching band, and they've had twirlers before. They were always male. And I knew that in order to make this work, my job would be to just work as hard as everybody else, do the same things everyone else was doing. And basically, I told myself, keep your mouth shut and don't ever let them see you cry. And that sounds like a horrible thing, but it was overwhelming. And at preseason, it was just typical back then, being an ROTC background and an all-male band, that, you know, they weren't always nice to each other. The freshmen.
There was a lot of rough language.
Oh, yeah. Rough language.
Anybody who was new to the organization.
And they just took it upon themselves, being somewhat like a fraternity, is at the time hazing did happen.
Yeah.
With freshmen, it was like you had to go through this initiation period where the upperclassmen were on your case the whole time about every step you took, every missed turn you made, every wrong note you played. They just felt that that was their way of toughening you up and teaching you. And, you know, so I would be sometimes when the start of rehearsal, you always started at attendance block, they called it. And so I would be in the front facing away from the band, and I'm hearing all these veterans, you know, kind of yelling and whatnot at freshmen back behind me. And I'd grit my teeth and I'd look straight ahead and say, you cannot cry. Don't take it personally. You cannot cry. They're doing this to everybody. but I'll have to admit, there were times that I thought, is this worth it? And, you know.
To be clear, in the attendance block, everyone's facing front.
Right.
And you're in the front, right, also facing front.
Right.
So
no one could see me.
Right. Yeah.
So I just kept reminding myself.
So are we on to, as you look back, 50 years? Or did we miss anything in there?
I guess what I want to say more about, like, preseason and stuff. I think everyone at preseason, although the, you know, the making the freshmen, you know, fetch your instrument and polish your horn and serve you at meals and stuff, the bottom line that was, once you'd gotten through preseason and sort of proved yourself, that all kind of eased up. And some things continued throughout the whole season. As a freshman, you still had to, you know, bring candy on bus trips and, you know, silly stuff like that. But in terms of the harassment of marching down the field, that pretty much eased up, I think. And those men that were most against having me in the band, simply because it had never happened before, ended up being probably my best friends and biggest supporters in the long run. To this day, friends with many of them. And they helped me with so many things that those first few weeks. Even though they didn't want me there, they came around.
Well, alumni band is tomorrow, we'll see a lot of those same people at the alumni band. And if anything, they're proud that they were there when that happened, and proud of you.
Yeah,
I
think so. Yeah. Another thing about preseason that was a little nerve-wracking for me is because Title IX, you know, it was in the news. It had just passed that summer, and it was a big deal. And so at preseason, when we're out practicing, the cameras and the journalists, newspaper people, were showing up and wanting to get interviews and pictures of Lynn and I. And I remember feeling uneasy about that because I thought, uh-oh, you know, this is signaling me out, and I don't want that. I don't want to be shown as someone special or different. I'm being interviewed and my picture's being taken. And I didn't think that would sit well, obviously, with the veteran members of the marching band. But so oftentimes, if I was able to, I would kind of say, oh, let's go over here. And there was a great big tree on Landon Field at the time. And I would take them. It's still there? I thought they cut one of them down. But anyway, we went behind this tree to do the little interview, like I was hiding or something. But I just felt a little uncomfortable, and I didn't want a big deal made of this, if possible.
Well, like any news source, they're hoping for something negative that they can make a front page story out of. And that kind of happened years beyond first year,
sure,
when you'd be interviewed for the 30th or the 40th, someone looking for some negativism within the entire experience. But
There were, especially like 10 years, 20 years, a lot of the questions that people would ask me were about how Lynn and I were treated and how bad was it, sort of thing. And, you know, frankly, it like I said, it wasn't any different than any other freshman for the most part. And when we got through it, like everyone else did.
So a general comment, when you look back 50 years, what's your observations today of this whole notion of transition to having a 50-50 mix of women and men in the marching band?
Well, first of all, my observations of the transition at the time is I had no point of reference for what it was. And I had no point of reference except for my 1 year at Western of what marching bands in particular, what that whole experience was with. So to transition to females when you didn't know what it was before, or couldn't relate to what it was before, I didn't really know what to think of the what was going on. Like I said, I was kind of naive. But now, in retrospect, as I look back, I have to say that I think there was a lot of things that happened before I arrived to smooth out the transition as much as possible, to make it be seamless, to make us feel welcomed and part of the marching band community. And I credit Dave Catron and Ken Bloomquist for their behind-the-scenes work in making sure that that happened throughout the season. And I believe that there were a lot of things that may have gone on that I never heard about or never witnessed. And I believe it's because Mr. Bloomquist and Mr. Catron dealt with things in private with individuals if needed, and actually shielded Lynn and I as much as they possibly could from things that were not appropriate or mean or whatever it might have been. So there was a lot that I to this day I don't know. But after that first season, 1973, it was like nothing had ever happened. It was like it's always been this way.
Mm-hmm. Were there twirlers at Michigan State before you?
Yes, but they were always male twirlers.
Yeah,
and in fact, Dan Williams was the twirler the year that I came in 72, and he taught me the ropes for what twirlers did. And the next year in 73, he became drum major, and I was twirler, and we brought in another feature twirler from West Virginia, Debbie Cifola, in 73. So there were two twirlers, and I believe that in 73 there were only maybe two or three other women in the block that year. So it wasn't that a big increase mm-hmm. at all.
Yeah. We've been over this earlier, but is there more that you can share about the general atmosphere within the band in general during your time, and maybe compare that to the atmosphere within the marching band today that you and I observe when we go to rehearsals?
The general atmosphere during my time was I found the group to be very, very proud of being in the marching band. Hardworking, extremely hardworking organization. There was so much respect for the directors and the whole organization. I know this is cliche, but the marching band is really a family, and lots of people say that, but I understand why people say that, because it's true. So supportive, but by the same token, you know, they were able to needle each other, kid each other, get on each other's case if it was warranted in order to achieve the overall goal of a stellar performance in Spartan Stadium on a football Saturday. There was group goals, obviously, as there would be with an organization like that, and that's what we all, you know, adhere to. This is the ultimate goal, and we're all in this together, and here's how we achieve that goal. It was very athletic, I thought, and of course still is, but when you think about marching up and down a field several times, Bois playing an instrument, you think about marching over to the stadium, you think about the kick step, the entrance that the band does while holding your instrument. It was extremely athletic, required a lot of stamina. You had to be in good shape. Think about the Big Ten flags. Those flags were heavy. And now I think the majority of the Big Ten flag corps is female. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, even women that joined the band were just as athletic and, you know, able to keep up with the strenuous marching and so forth. And, you know, some people thought at one time, oh, you know, women won't be able to do this, it's too strenuous and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, of course, that wasn't true.
Both you and Lynn were very athletic, and so that was never a problem.
Right, yeah, it wasn't. But compared to 50 years ago, I would say in terms of the band, the playing ability is much better as my...
Today,
than it was back then.
Much harder to become a member of this band today.
Yeah, I'm much harder. And the marching style, probably, it takes its ups and downs, you know, depending on the show you're doing and stuff. Sometimes the marching show is, you know, very athletic and high step marching and a lot of movement, and sometimes it's a little more flowing and stuff. But, you know, still, it's, you have to be in shape.
I want to clarify the difficulty in getting into the marching band as a member is, first and foremost, a playing audition for you, a twirling audition. Mm-hmm. And then a secondary consideration will be one's ability to march well. So, but the primary consideration is a playing audition. And today it's much more strict than it was at the time. If I can interject, the one thing about the general atmosphere within the band back in our time versus today, one thing that's very similar is the hierarchy of leadership. There were squad leaders back in our time, and there are squad leaders today and section leaders who have much of the same role that they've always had. So that hierarchy of leadership really hasn't changed in 50 years. And if you compare that to, say, other Big Ten marching bands, they all operate a little bit differently. And some, if you were to attend rehearsal, there's all kinds of jabbering, people telling each other what to do and so forth. With Spartan Marching Band, that whole notion of the hierarchy of leadership really has not changed much in all that time. A new question, traditions within the band different today than back then? And same question for the traditions of the twirlers.
Yeah, there are many, many, many traditions that have continued. However, traditions are only good if they evolve over the years and are tweaked over the years, so that what is a tradition today looks very different than the tradition of 1973, except for the fact that the core idea is still there. For example, the drum cadence that the marching band has, their march to the stadium, everybody's familiar with that cadence. That started back in the 50s?
64 or 5.
With Merritt Lutz.
Yeah.
And so the bones of that cadence are still in the cadence, but with the advancement and involvement and the different use of percussion instruments, it's been enhanced. But you can still hear the basic cadence as it was 50 years ago.
It's been fancied up. There's
fancied
no question.
Up, yeah, definitely. And the Big Ten flags, which are now Big 20, I don't know how many they have now, they have very staunch traditions too, and things that they always do. And that still carries on. The whole pregame, the march to the stadium is the same, except we didn't have the entourage of police escorts and things like that. We
closing had, off roads and all this.
Yeah, we had to compete with cars going the other direction as we tried to get from point A, Landon Field, to point B, the stadium. And so we would, you know, march along to get there, but cars were fighting us. And
the route has never changed.
No, the route is the same. Yeah. The route is the same. But so the march to the stadium is still the same. The entrance, the kickstep entrance, that will probably never change. That's a huge tradition. It's a signature of the band. And most of the pregame format has been the same all these years, too.
There have been a couple of small additions forming the Spartan head.
Right,
shield.
The head instead of the S.
Right.
But, you know, basically that has stayed the same. It's much more elaborate now and more professionally done. Now, twirlers, it's interesting because there's something that I did not discover for many years, like 40 years. the feature twirlers have kept the same routine that I used or that I choreographed in 1973 was the year that I did it. So the same routine, the march to the stadium, the twirlers are still doing that particular march. They still do the same pretty much pregame routine. When I found out about that, it was very interesting to me because that was not my intent, that things that I had made up basically would carry on. It was never said to any twirlers, we have to do this street march, we have to do this pregame entrance this way. But somehow it just kept continuing year after year after year and passed on to the new feature twirlers would learn that routine.
You're referring to what they do with their baton.
What they do, yeah.
Beyond just simply marching forward.
Yeah, all the moves that you make with your arms and whatnot.
Yeah.
And they still do them. So I find that interesting. So yes, the traditions are still there, but they've been updated.
So emotionally, what's it like to kick step out of the stadium, out of the tunnel for the first time?
Oh my gosh. It was nervous, a very nervous, jittery feeling for me, not unlike what I would feel before a competition routine. You always have those butterflies, which is a good thing because it helps you focus, actually. It was overwhelming. Adrenaline kicks in. There's this energy. I would have to force myself to focus because you can be overwhelmed by, when you burst out of the tunnel, the amount of people in the stands, the amount of cheering and the loudness. And, you know, if you don't focus, I don't know what would happen, but it's hard to describe. And when you ask anyone, what is the most memorable experience of all of being in marching band, I think most of us would say that coming out of the stadium at pregame, coming in out of the tunnel onto the field at pregame, and just the awesomeness and the wow factor of that.
I don't think it ever wears off, but I can contribute that as a 18-year-old coming from a little tiny small town and bursting out of the tunnel to 70,000 screaming.
Yeah.
You just like can't. Moving to Mars.
Yeah, you can't describe. Yeah, well, especially for those who came from a small town, and for me, who was never even in the marching band to begin with, and to go from, you know, Western in the, it was the marching 100 of the Bronco marching band, to a Big Ten university and all that goes with that. It was just pretty incredible.
And you were in the Spartan Marching Band how many years?
5 years altogether. 1972, I twirled with Dan Williams. In 73 and 74 and 75, Debbie Cifolo was feature twirler with me. And then in 1976, I was a graduate student, and Kathy Skelton twirled with me my last year. So there were two feature twirlers about the 5 years that I was in the Spartan Marching Band.
Great. So one of the best parts for me, I think, about being in the Spartan Marching Band is that there's this thing called the MSU Alumni Band. When you graduate from Michigan State, you don't ever just go off into the sunset. You get to come back once a year and participate. So can you talk about your experiences in the Alumni Band?
Yeah, well, my last season was 76, so in 77, I immediately started attending the Alumni Band reunion every year. You and I were then married. We got married in July of 77. I believe the first marching band couple to marry. which would make sense, obviously. So we would come back at least from 77 through 1988 every year. We didn't miss an alumni band appearance. And I don't know how many years after that, but I still came back every 10-year anniversary. So, of course, 92, 2002, 2012, and last year, the 50th anniversary of Title IX in 2022. I also came back in 2019 because that was the 150 years of MSU bands. And so it was sort of a celebration of the 150 year of MSU bands. And the others, 10 years, they did acknowledge an anniversary of Title IX, you know, yeah. The 20th, 30th, 40th, 50th.
Often during halftime on the 50-yard line.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nice. Unless I've missed anything, just a last question that's an overall wrap-up. I'd be curious to know if you have any sense of the historical implications of being the very first female member of the Spartan Marching Band.
Not then, but I do now. As the years have gone on, I've realized, as each milestone has come up, that the whole enactment of Title IX was an extremely huge deal for women and in lots of areas. Not just sports, and it changed people's lives in many positive ways. Like I said earlier, I was at the time embarrassed by the attention because I didn't want to stand out, even though the nature of being a feature twirler is you stand out. I also did not even give a passing thought to the whole women's lib unit stuff that was going on in the 70s, early 70s. You know, that didn't even cross my mind as a reason for wanting to be in the marching band. Basically, I just wanted to be at Michigan State, not to make a point, but because I wanted to continue twirling, and MSU, because of Title IX, provided that opportunity. And some people will say, thank you for paving the way. I hear that a lot. And it kind of gives me pause because I did not think of it at the time like that I was paving the way for all the women in the future. So I kind of hope that I, you know, set a tone for the women who followed me, that we are all members of the band. We are all working toward the same goal. None of us is to be singled out necessarily. And that we want every year to be a seamless transition to the next group of new, you know, marching band members. I often think about one thing that I kept in my mind is the example of the Purdue's Golden Girl. If you're at all familiar with marching bands, the Purdue band has a ton of twirlers. They have the Golden Girl, which they've had for years. They've had the Silver Twins, the Girl in Black, and a line of majorettes and so on, plus all kinds of other things. But I remember seeing the Golden Girl when the band went to Purdue and watching her, and she was definitely like the star of the show and was out in front of the band marching down to the stadium, and there was just this whole kind of sense that I had that she was sort of the focal point. And I remember thinking, I don't ever want that to happen at MSU. And so I always kept that image of the Golden Girl in my mind. And, you know, nothing negative about them. They were excellent twirlers and stuff, but just the nature of how that band operated. And I hope that I, through my example, passed on to the next feature twirlers for years to come of the importance of not making yourself the one that everybody is looking at or focusing on. You're doing your job. Ken Bloomquist told me when I first came on board that my job as a feature twirler was to entertain the parts of the stadium that maybe the marching band was not completely focused on. Like if the marching band was focused on the press side, that my job was maybe to go around the end zones or toward the back and twirl back there. And I always kept that in my mind, and I've tried to pass that on to, you know, the twirlers, that that's kind of your role, and your routines and what you do and how you move on the field needs to be all in sync with what the marching band is doing and making it one cohesive performance.
Anything that I've forgotten?
Yeah, I think the only thing I would like to stress that I don't often talk about is how grateful I am, you know, that Title I came along when it did. Title IX came along when it did, and that the Spartan Marching Band was named as an example. It made relationships with people that have lasted a lifetime, extraordinary people, and I value the connections to all the former and current twirlers, which I still have. They're very gracious and, you know, talented women, and it was an honor to be in that position and to represent Michigan State University, and it's in my heart and always will be.
Well, I'm certainly grateful because I got to meet my bride.
Yeah. And here we are 46 years later.
Right.
Still talking about marching band.
Right.